Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well on another really nice spring day here as we continue to head towards summer. It feels like it's getting here pretty quick. But, yeah, hope everybody doing well. The Thursday show with Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, and Drew at the controls here in the studio. So we'd love for you to join in. How's it going, Dan?
I'm doing all right. How are you, Bill?
Pretty well. Just trying to catch up on what may
have
happened.
How's the yard? How's the yard doing?
It's doing pretty well.
What's on the to-do list? What's been done?
It's done.
We have people who are...
I think I finished. I think I got everything done for this week.
Tell you what. Bill's yard. This is some free advice. Bill's yard should be a sponsored segment out there, like an adventure. Mm. I don't know if it's a... like a hardware store or somewhere.
I mean, it's all different kinds of things. It can be pool supplies. It can be hardware. It can be landscaping. Today there was a little painting. Okay. There was a little trimming. There was a little blowing.
Tell you what, if there's an enterprising handyman or something out there that wants to get a mention or two, I'd love to be talking about that when we go to Bill's yard at the beginning of both hours, because we have people who want to know like what's been done and what needs to be done.
Did a little edging and trimming and blowing and. Touched up a couple of the pieces of yard art.
Okay, today. we have a guest, our special guest co-host on Thursdays recently became. Can I disclose this?
A homeowner. Folks?
Yeah.
It's, I think actually, I don't think I'm disclosing actually, it. I think you've. Yeah.
Speaking of yard work, I bought a lawnmower and cut my yard for the first time earlier this week.
So the grass is in.
The grass is.
That's
in.
Good.
Yeah.
Was that the lemonade on social media? I saw was a reward
as a reward for you know finishing it. No. It was one of those things though. It's like it's the new grass. It's let you know they everything was. You know, it's just the weeds had gotten so high.
Right. They do grow fast.
Fighting. With the old push mower out there, it had been a minute because I've lived in an apartment for a long time, and when I was a kid, I cut the grass all the time at my parents' house. But then it's been a minute since I had to do it, so I had to get back to used to rolling the old push mower out there. But it was good. So yeah, trying to early days of home ownership, it's pretty fun.
There's almost always something. Yeah, that, you just that look needs
around,
to be done.
Yeah, and we're in a brand new build, and like I'm still looking around, being like, okay, I need to touch up that or fix that or do something like that. So
how's the neighborhood? Do people live in the neighborhood? Is it?
Oh yeah.
Is it,
oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He lives about a block behind Matt.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I know you said it was a new build, and I know sometimes folks can be early.
Our street, the street that we're on, is they're finishing it up, but we're like kind of the last phase. So most
there are a couple that aren't finished there.
We got one right next to us and one right across the street from us are getting built, but yeah.
Oh, no, I know where you live then because I know exactly where those two are. That's where I turn coming out of seeing the granddaughter.
Right there on the corner, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, so really nice neighborhood.
Yeah.
Is it two different names for that subdivision?
Yeah.
You don't have to give either of them on the air.
No, I'm just, I think it's like two different names depending on which part of the subdivision you're in.
I think so.
You're over in the Matt Cameron district. So. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Very nice neighborhood. We're enjoying it. So, but yeah, I'm not at Bill Cameron level of yard.
Well, you don't have. I mean,
I probably have
a little more yard than I should have. Yeah, no, I do have a pool,
and that's.
We never had one until we moved into this one. The boys were. I mean, Scott was, I guess, a sophomore.
Hmm.
When we moved in, sophomore in high school when we moved in. So. Yeah. I always wanted one.
Growing up, I was just like, it would be.
And people were telling me you're crazy. You're going to want to cover it in. It's like no, they're. there are things now that make it easier, as long as you don't let it get too out of control. So no, I have no problem with it. And it really helps when you have yard work to be able to just jump
right
in the pool.
In. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. We could talk some sports today, I guess, if it comes down to it.
Are these two College World Series teams facing off?
Yes, on elimination day today? Yes.
Yeah. Tennessee and Texas A&M, both expected to host in the first round, and if they were to make it to Super Regionals, both expected. I mean, two of the top five seeds nationally, according to most folks projecting. Look at this replay here, Bill. A no-doubter.
A bomb. Tennessee, they're very good at launch angle. I mean, they are really, really good at that. They have taken to that very, very well. And, they're looking to stay alive here.
Tony Vitello's done a
– Yes, he has.
He's done a really good job. I know it's not – well, he's not everyone's favorite, he's not everyone's favorite flavor. Like, it's not everyone's preferred style of baseball as far as the overtly confident and maybe, some would say even arrogant style
of celebrating.
But I think that the results are hard to argue with. I mean, he's been incredibly successful, and they go into this postseason as one of the favorites to win it all.
Yeah, it has been crazy here in the SEC tournament, and we talked a little bit about it yesterday. That the top seeds don't have as much to play for. I mean, they know they're already locked in to regionals and super regionals just hold serve.
It's kind of like in basketball. You know that the conference tournament's not going to affect you too much.
But in basketball, it's not like you're going to sit your point guard and play a point guard that hasn't played all year. But in the SEC baseball tournament, you see some of that. You see teams going with their number three starter, or maybe somebody who only pitched a few games during the year, because you know who your one and two guys are. Hopefully you know who your one and two guys are, and you're looking for someone who might be able to help you depth-wise in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's especially for the teams that had the first-round buys, they're in a double elimination. So it's like, well, one game, even if they lose the first one, it's not the end of the world if they get bumped in two,
right,
because they're still there, but they've got a chance because they'll still throw one of their better guys.
And I don't cover baseball. I don't cover college baseball. So I'm not as, well-versed as y'all are in it. But I did see earlier today that Ole Miss announced that Mike Bianco would be coming back for another year. So I know there was a lot of speculation, mm-hmm, especially with the way that this season went. I guess maybe, honestly, since they won the College World Series.
The College World Series, you're right. It has not been what they would have expected to follow that up with.
Yeah.
I guess 3 years.
And then you've got a situation, I think, where – you don't want to make it. You don't want to make it so that. You don't want to make it so that you're making a decision kind of emotionally. But man, getting put out by Mississippi State in the fashion that you did in the tournament, I know, got a lot of folks that were, Ole Miss fans pretty upset. But yeah, it'll be year 25 next year for him at Ole Miss.
Golly, has it been that many?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Nobody gets that kind of longevity anymore in college sports.
No, you're right, in any of the sports. We'll keep you updated on what's going on. I mean, this is an elimination day here in the College World Series and the College World Series and the SEC tournament, and it's been crazy. I mean, the lower seeds have really had their way throughout. Now, it doesn't look like that's going to be the case here, since Tennessee's the one seed, and they now have a 7-3 lead over A&M. But it's fun, but it's a whole lot more fun if you're in it,
mm-hmm,
to be watching. All right, we're just getting.
We've known. I mean, Auburn started the first three, four weeks of the of conference play
against top five teams,
and they put themselves in such a deep hole It went from thinking 10 wins would be a very disappointing season to hoping they could rally and get to 10 wins in conference play. I mean, Auburn blew, a couple of tires really early in the race when it comes to conference play, and now they got a lot of work to do to figure out who's coming back and who needs to be brought in.
Yeah, yep. That phrase that we didn't use much until the last couple of years, roster management, is absolutely critical. We're just getting underway here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Let's officially welcome him. We've been talking to him already since the show started, but Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going. It's been an interesting week, and you know, at the Observer, a lot of basketball. Got some football tomorrow in the mailbag, and I was talking. Coming into radio, I was wondering what we were going to talk about today because I'm trying to figure out what we're going to talk about on our podcast tonight with me and Painter and Dan. So,
well, I mean,
it's that time of year.
The settlement that the SEC apparently is approving today, and that would just leave. I don't know if the Pac-12 has yet.
No, but I don't even know anymore as far as like if the settlement's approved. Like, is that going to?
I don't know if that does it, or is that just. You know, one step.
I know it takes House versus NCAA off the board. Mm-hmm. That's the settlement in question. I don't know how much, you know, future litigation we avoid, or if that puts a new set system into place. I mean, it seems like revenue sharing could be in effect.
People are saying that's what this is setting up. This is paving the way for that. Mm-hmm. By settling and knowing, like, okay, we settled this. All right, how do we make sure we don't get in this situation again? Well, the way to do that is, you know, revenue sharing, and then there's going to be about 7 million legal hoops to jump through.
Oh, yeah.
You got to figure out how this works with Title IX. You got to figure out how this works for, you know, conferences that aren't and schools that aren't just flush with cash. You got to figure out, like, roster spots. You got to figure out, you know, what that means when it comes to you know, scholarship value. Like, there's so much that you got to sort out there. But this is where this was always heading because, as we have seen really for the last few years now, the NCAA really didn't have any sort of legal leg to stand on with their definition of amateurism. And when NIL came into place and there were no guardrails in place because they were kind of – the NCAA were had to get kind of dragged into it by the schools and the conferences and the states and the lawmakers themselves, this is what happens. But I think the good news is for those of us who – I mean, all of us in here and pretty much everybody listening who care about college sports – I do think this is a step to, while things are going to be different in the future, while it won't be what we think of as amateur sports anymore, maybe we could get to a spot where, you know, there are rules again, there are regulations, and it's not this kind of wild west where it's no holes barred out here and you know, teams and schools and, you know, you run into situations like what, you know, the other big news with this week was the, you know, of course, the Jaden Rashada lawsuit. Mm-hmm. I mean, that... In a world with rules, that doesn't ever get to that point. So hopefully these steps are being taken while drastic, while very, very much changing what we think of as college sports. Maybe it'll get us to some kind of semblance of rules again.
Maybe it's because Furiosa is coming out tonight. But like I just see the apocalypse when I think about the roads we're on in college athletics right now. Not because of NIL or the potential of revenue. I mean, I think conference realignment sort of put us on a path to where we're getting to a point. And I think it was the Iowa State AD, the Iowa State AD or the president who said something. You know, he echoed something that we've talked about before in the past, which is the next phase of conference realignment is going to be the big fish in conferences looking at the small fish in the same conference and saying, why are we splitting?
Cuts.
Why are we splitting the revenue evenly?
Wait, but
that's what's going on right now. Talk about that in the ACC.
Yeah, that's why.
Absolutely.
That's Clemson and Florida State right now.
And I think the SEC and the Big Ten are not necessarily going to be
immune
to that.
That's why Texas got to run to the Big 12 like they did for a while.
I mean, I think especially if we get into a revenue sharing world where suddenly athletic departments have to be a lot more careful.
This is about to be a formal.
I just wonder if we're getting to a point. That's what the Iowa State guy was saying. You know, if I weren't at the top of the SEC or the Big Ten in football, I would wonder about my place moving forward because the programs at the top of those conferences going to start pointing fingers at the teams at the bottom of those conferences.
I think a formal split of the haves and have-nots in college athletics are definitely going to happen, and I think inside that, yes, you are racing to a future where this could end up being – and it was like we were saying like last year or 2 years ago when –
and Morton Joe. That's what we're racing towards, that future.
With the whole thing of Fox and ESPN and, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC, a lot of people think they're racing to a future where this is going to end up looking like the AFC and the NFC, where it's just you've got one that's aligned with this broadcast network and you got another one that's aligned with this broadcast network, and that's who we've got. And everybody else who ain't in that, you're just playing something completely different.
And the other thing that that is going to have to be settled, I mean, is the players are going to have to agree to this. I mean, there's going to end up being a players association, whether they're considered whatever kind of employees or not, because the NCAA is, I mean, they're desperately trying to, you know, keep from absolutely just being dissolved. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see this settlement or any settlement precluding more lawsuits. Even if the conferences decide this is what we're going to spend, we've got this much, that the players are going to go, hey, wait a minute, no, you're still making more money. We want more. I mean, it's going to be a never-ending thing until there is an actual – there are organizations, one from the players and one from the colleges.
And that's the thing.
Or conferences.
Like, even in the professional leagues that have players' associations, that's why we have lockouts. That's why there are work stoppages. Like, those are, you know, those are constant. You got to have – it's a constant conversation. And, yeah, I mean, that's – but that's the thing is that, you know, we got to a point where for decades and decades and decades, the NCAA thrived off of, hey, we make all this money, and our schools make all this money, and we don't have to pay it to the players, so we can kind of spread it around to all these different things, whether it be facilities or other sports. That does not have any legal backing, and now you've got to come up with a new system because of it. And that's where it kind of gets like, yeah, there's no telling where this is going to end up next.
And I still think that a mistake in hindsight, and you can point to any number of them, you know, as far as like, oh, well, how'd you get to like such a contentious situation now, and such an open-ended future. But when conferences were, you know, when conferences started making their own media deals, I felt like the natural thing that was going to happen was you were going to create competition within the conferences to present the best football and basketball product. Once conferences could start signing their own deal with ESPN or with Fox or whatever.
They don't need the NCAA. You're already doing the college football without it.
Exactly. And unless the NCAA was going to be the middleman, brokering the deals with the television networks and things like that, and then splitting the money. But if you don't do it that way, if you do it with conferences, then it makes sense for the ACC to go get Miami and Virginia Tech and Boston College 20-something years ago to bring them into improve their football
position. It's the whole reason the SEC has Missouri.
It's yes.
If we reset conference realignment and we got back to the original 12 in the SEC, or I say the original 12, you know,
the 12 from 92.
Yeah. And if we're looking at it right now and say, hey, SEC, you got to get to 16. Who you taking? You may still take A&M, but you'll take Texas and Oklahoma, but you probably ain't taking Missouri.
But even A&M, Missouri, Nebraska, and Colorado leaving the Big 12 is a product of this same competition to improve because the Big 12 gave so much to Texas to keep them that it upset multiple other teams in that conference, and they went and found better deals in their mind elsewhere. It was A&M and Missouri to the SEC. It was Colorado.
But they wanted to get Missouri in there because they thought the St. Louis and Kansas City TV market would be important. And it's like, man, that is such an antiquated thing to think about now.
I also don't think they wanted to take an odd number. Like they wanted to
take
A&M, and then it was, well, who's your best dance partner available right now to take with A&M?
I think
it's never going to be a good fit.
I think if you all ever do it all over again, you're like, all right, you know, they're more than Missouri. And Missouri, I mean.
If you do it over again, are you taking UCF?
No.
Like instead of Missouri,
if you're doing it over again and you're taking A&M and you're taking Oklahoma and you're taking Texas, just take Oklahoma State. That's what I would think. I think Oklahoma State would give you just as much as what Missouri brings to the table.
They probably give at least as much.
And you have a natural, you know, rival. It is a natural rival. You are continuing Bedlam, you are continuing a series that, while it is one-sided in football recently, it is, you know, an in-state rivalry. Picking off Missouri, it's like, okay, who's Missouri's biggest rival? Kansas? and now they don't play each other very often, you know, anymore. And Missouri, I've said it a million times, you ever go to the University of Missouri, you go to that campus, you walk around, it's like, this ain't an SEC school. I don't even think it's a Big 12 school either. I think it's a school that's always wanted to be in the Big 10 but never got in. And, like, it's that vibe.
It seems, it seems to fit the Big 10 more than Nebraska.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I've always thought KU and Missouri were Big 10 teams.
Oklahoma State, to me, and I'm maybe a little more critical of this, they feel like a bigger program, or they felt like a bigger program these last couple of years, in part because, I mean, they've had football success under Gundy, but
he used to be a really good basketball program.
I wonder how much of that is
pretty good at baseball, softball.
They're, and I guess people could say this about Auburn too, where it's like,
get them into wrestling.
A big reason why you're viewed as a superpower or a borderline superpower is because your rivals are also superpowers. I wonder what's going to happen to Oklahoma State when you take Texas and Oklahoma away. Like if they're going to be able to continue,
they're going to be TCU and Baylor.
Yeah, like I mean, I don't know.
If you do it all over again and you're trying to find that fourth instead of Missouri, I don't think it's Baylor or TCU, because I don't think those are SEC schools. I think Oklahoma State vibes wise is a lot more like the SEC than any of the other ones you get, because it's like, you're probably not taking Houston. You know, you're probably not taking, any of these other new Big 12 teams. Or you're saying, hey, we're taking Texas at Oklahoma and maybe Texas A&M and then looking at a Florida State or a Clemson and just trying to round it out that way. That's the other option.
I don't know what conference – I know we got to take a break, but I don't know what conference can really feel super comfortable at the moment, because the Big Ten and the SEC, I think, have to
worry. They're it.
I think, well, they're the most comfortable, but even then, as the Oklahoma State guy was talking, or the Iowa State guy was talking about, like, I think at some point you're going to have to start worrying about what happens when your biggest fish get unhappy with the status quo.
Sure.
And what does that mean for, like, does that start a knife fight within the conference, and are the less successful programs historically?
I think you got to imagine the guy who's saying that, it's Iowa State.
It is, yes.
Right? You know, so it's like, it's easy to say that from the outside. Sure, I think if people could snap, like if you could get the SEC, every SEC team to get in there and take a truth serum or whatever, be like, hey, you want to get Vandy out of here? You want to replace it with somebody that actually moves the needle more? Yeah, maybe you do that. But like, I think there's more of that knife fight kind of mentality when the pie isn't as big as it is. That's how it was in the Big 12, right? And you know, I don't know how long that guy's been at Iowa State, but that's speaking from experience. At least in the SEC, they're printing money. You know, it's not like there aren't problems, but like, man, they're like, you know, that it's still going to be like, people are just going to roll with it because it's going so well. Not like the ACC where they were like, well, what do we need to do? Maybe let's go get SMU for some reason, and then Cal and Stanford.
Yeah,
and
but now if this settlement indeed does force every school to shell out $20 to $30 million to the players, everybody's not going to be thrilled. I know we need to get to break. We will continue this. We'd love for you to join in. Anything on your mind, sports wise, here on the Thursday Drive.
This is Zach Alsterbrook.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Let's get to The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar and John. Is up first. Hey, John.
Hey, good afternoon. I just caught the tail end of your conversation about revenue sharing in college athletics, and I was going to ask how that would, if it came about, would they like divvy up the money generated through the entire Division I TV rights and hand that out to all Division I schools, or would they do it by conferences? If they do it by conferences, of course, that's still going to be unfair. Advantage, because like the SEC and the Big Ten are always, they got bigger contracts, so more money. So
yeah, there's
it's not
so
evenly divided. It's, yeah.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, if it's not evenly divided as far as the money each player gets throughout Division I football, it's just it's a competitive disadvantage for everybody else, and not what college football is intended to be, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I think if you set the revenue level, if you said, all right, everyone in Division I is going to pay the same amount in revenue sharing, I think you could run into a situation where SEC and Big Ten schools would be fine with paying their players that amount. Virtually everyone else in Division I might say,
yeah, you got to.
That's a little too much money.
You have to wonder if this turns into
the smaller schools. I mean, they didn't want to vote. They didn't want this thing to pass in the first place. Mm-hmm. There's so much that is still to be ironed out, determined. And I mean, we have no idea how this thing is.
You
got to
wonder
if
this is going to be like a salary cap situation where everybody has the same amount of money to play.
See,
if that's
the case, the players are absolutely going to.
We were just talking,
go on strike or something.
We were just talking about the possibility of you're going to get rid of scholarship limitations, but you're going to put in more set. All right, this is how many players you're allowed to have on the roster.
Yeah,
and every single player on the roster probably is entitled to. I would think from a revenue sharing standpoint, it's probably gonna be an equal amount. I would think that every player gets the, and then you
still have NIL.
And I still think the most I would guess that the conference handling it through just because they handle the media rights.
There was a thing I saw where Yahoo had kind of reported that part of the thing about this would be like, you know, when you're talking about NIL and the revenue sharing, part of this model would be everything kind of comes in-house.
It's
no longer a situation where it's like, oh, we're working indirectly through the collective. It's like, no, you're paying these folks directly, which I think is better for transparency, and I think it's better for all that. But, yeah, you wonder about, like, is everybody going to be created equal in that system?
I'm thinking, John.
Is this going to be more like baseball, or is this going to be more like, you know, like Major League Baseball, or is it going to be more like the NFL where, like, everybody gets the same, or it's – whatever you got is whatever you can spend.
I mean, what I just imagine, and I could be completely wrong, is you get into the revenue sharing and everybody's getting a base. You've got a certain amount that everybody is getting. Then you've got conference, or I doubt it's going to be the NCAA, but I think then conference limits as to what your NIL is going to be on top of that base. So, that's the way I sort of imagine it happening, but I could be completely wrong.
So the revenue sharing issue of it, would it how about the non-revenue sport athletes? Are they going to get a piece of that as well?
That's where the thing has to be decided. I know Title IX is a big thing there. It's like, you know, do you have to have equal money?
Do you have to?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking.
And there are
like
a lot of schools that would take a hacksaw to their athletic departments, the number of sports they offer.
Sure.
Would probably go to
if you're going to think it's like whatever you spend in football or like whatever you spend in your male sports, you have to spend an equal amount in women's sports. If that's what the legal definition is, you know, they still have to sort that out.
I agree with Dan. You're going to see a ton of sports dropped because, if you have to spend a certain amount, you're going to start adding a ton.
Because if you're rich,
the deals in place were signed by the networks largely to present football and men's basketball. There is women's basketball is generating revenue ratings now more than ever before.
Sure. But you get some in the postseason for baseball and in softball and some of these other sports
it's a drop in the bucket
compared to
if that's where the revenue that you're sharing is coming from.
And also your basketball revenue, a lot of that comes from what the NCAA is,
right?
Yeah, in the tournament.
I just drove by the Riverwalk Stadium on the way home, and apparently the Sun Belt Conference tournament's going
right
on.
That's a good place to
do it. Yeah, Troy should be playing here pretty soon. I think they play around 5.
Just passed a bunch of school buses. They were decked out. Southern Miss, Old Dominion, and who else? Georgia
Troy
State.
Troy and Southern Miss.
Troy and Southern. Yeah, Troy and Southern Miss are next. Today.
Southern's still good?
Yeah.
I know they're usually really good in baseball.
All right. Well, I appreciate y'all's time. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, John.
Hey, I just saw this pop up on Twitter, but speaking of college baseball tournaments, this is just funny. Oklahoma baseball is, you know, Big 12 tournament. It's the last Big 12 tournament for them. Mm-hmm. They just made it to the semis. They just beat Kansas to get to the semis of the Big 12 tournament. And a guy I follow who covers Oklahoma tweeted this out. Final score was 7-5. The Oklahoma Sooners had 14 hits. But Kansas only had 4 because Oklahoma won with 7 errors. That's got to be the most I've ever seen, like, a really competent, like, higher
Oklahoma
level.
Oklahoma made seven errors and won the game.
That's seven errors has got to be the most I've seen on a line score of like a competent like higher level baseball
team.
Yeah,
not
little league, not even high school or anything like that. No, like seven errors. How do you do that?
Kansas committed an error in the bottom of the first, and it was their only error of the game. And then
Oklahoma had seven.
Follows it. Yeah,
I got to look up how they got these errors. I'm gonna do that.
All right, I got the box right here. Okay, top of the second.
Are they all one guy? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Are they just smoking grounders or the shortstop and he's just got the yips?
It's all on the first baseman.
No. Fielding error by the left fielder allows.
Catcher just can't catch anything.
Fielding error by the left fielder allows runner from third to score. Top of the second. Fielding error by the third baseman allows.
If it's one
that'd be pretty wild.
Yeah,
seven different players,
that'd be awesome.
Fielding error by a third baseman allowed runners to advance to second, third, and score unearned.
So that's two on the third baseman.
That's the second inning still. Fielding error by the shortstop allows runners.
Oh, in the same inning?
Yes, these are all in the top. This is all in the top of the second.
just got the yips. Fielding
error by
the
shortstop allows runners to advance to third.
Pitcher's got
to
be going. How many outs am I getting?
And unearned.
Eight.
All right, moving to the top of the third, where
the pitcher comes up. He's like, I got to strike all these guys out.
That's right.
I can't. The ball cannot
put
be put
the ball
in
play. It's an E.
Runners on first and second. Single up the middle. A runner advances to third on a fielding error by the center fielder.
Good grief.
Runner,
these are all fielding errors too, right?
Left fielder, center fielder, third baseman, shortstop so far.
Let's see here. Let's keep going now. That's
two
of
each.
Top of the sixth. Top of the seventh. Fielding error by the first baseman.
Okay.
Allows a runner
first baseman
to advance to third.
Second baseman's the only infielder that hadn't made an error, and the right fielder is the only outfielder that hasn't.
And we are in the top of the ninth, where a runner reaches on a throwing error by the shortstop.
Okay.
That runner then came around to score unearned.
Okay, so the second baseman and the right field, catcher, second baseman, right fielder, and pitcher.
None of the pitchers
made it through the game without an E.
And in the
how many earned runs in the ball game?
And the funny thing is that it's them advancing to the
semifinals.
They only
gave up five runs, making seven errors.
They're advancing to the semifinals of the conference tournament. It's not like it's just one random game. It's like, you had seven errors. Like, what is the post game talk like? Hey guys, congrats, we're in the semifinals. That's, you know, we still have a chance to win a title. Oh, by the way, that's the worst defense I've ever seen in my life.
Flush.
How did y'all get
onward,
away with that?
Onward and upward, right? But it's like, and they did have the tying run. Kansas had the tying run at the plate in the.
Honestly,
like
seven
eight,
errors.
It's like eight missing eight field goals and still winning.
I'm thinking like in football, that's like. Eight or nine turnovers. Like seven is a lot. It's like eight or nine turnovers and you still won the game. That's what I'm looking for.
All right. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Ajana thinks back with us when we another John. We'll be back with more of your phone calls on the other side here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. 20 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson, back to the Drive hotline, and John. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. Love the last segment talking about the Oklahoma win over Kansas in baseball today. But it got me to – I've had this on my mind for a while, wanted your guys' opinion on it. When you think about the Big 12 and how it was formed, and really Oklahoma and Texas over the last 20 years, were the two dominant programs. And I don't know if a third emerged. I mean, Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, they all had, you know, a brief period of time. But nobody really emerged. And I was thinking back to it. You know, with those two schools, I think the last two national championships out of the revenue-generating sports was Texas with Vince Young. And I think Oklahoma won one with in, like, 2000. And it just got me to thinking, like, how quickly, with that inferior of a competition, how quickly do you think those teams could, or not could, will win a national championship in men's basketball, baseball, football once they join the SEC?
Yeah, I had the last 2 weeks in my mailbag, I've had questions about who do you feel like of the new Big 12 teams will win the SEC first? I had that one.
Yeah, you want to stick with the Big Four sports. You want to go football, basketball, you know, women's basketball, football, baseball.
Texas will be a trendy pick to go to the SEC championship game
Texas is the pick in football for sure.
I think most folks will have, with all due respect to Alabama, I think most folks will have Georgia, Texas as the projected SEC championship game this fall. Like that's
life's going to get tougher for Texas, but I think in an expanded playoff
system,
they
got a nice schedule for their first year in the league, though, don't they?
First two years. Yeah. We've talked about that recently. I don't know what Oklahoma did to deserve their fate, and I don't know what Texas did to deserve their fate.
And while Oklahoma's had ups and downs, you look at the Bob Stoops era, and
I think if you're thinking of the former Big 12 schools, you can throw Missouri and A&M there as well, to have joined the SEC, the ones who have joined the SEC. And I think if you want to bet, like, who's your best
Texas
bet to win
is
at,
still your
it's
best bet
Texas
right now of the four.
Football. Yeah. Texas football is your best bet. And then it's like,
I guess Oklahoma football would be good.
We were talking about just SEC. If you were talking about SEC championships, I think, honestly, of the teams in men's basketball, I think A&M's the best set up for success. And they won right before Buzz got there. They won like a regular season title, I think. But, it is a really, really good question. But, yeah, Texas football seems to be the best shot that any of them
look,
have.
Look, Texas and Oklahoma are coming in better position than – A&M or Missouri.
I think Gillespie,
when they came
I think
in.
Gillespie won that league.
Bill, if I may, I think another related point on that is let's say there was a futures prop in Vegas where out of the Big Four that y'all mentioned, in the next 5 years, will either of those teams win a national championship in, let's say, the next 5 years? And honestly, I'd probably be on the no side of that equation.
Yeah, it's just there's so many variables at play there for sure. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I know we're talking about the revenue generating sports. The best shot I think these new teams have coming in to win a title is in softball. Oklahoma's a dynasty, and they're not even number one in the country this year. That's Texas. So, that's where it's going to be.
And A&M might win the baseball title this year.
They
too.
Could.
Let's keep in mind.
But
A&M goes into this baseball postseason as one of the top four or five teams in the country.
But to John's point, it does make you wonder. And in 5 years, it'd be interesting to look back at this. Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC. Obviously, it's more money, it's all the things that you would want to do. But in terms of did it get you in a better spot to win a national championship? Be very interesting to see in a few years.
I don't know about that. Feel like the competition level has stepped up so much.
Exactly. And in a expanded playoff field, you don't have to be the team.
No, you're
to
come right. Out of the you SEC. Don't have you don't have to be the best team.
But how much are you going to be worn down by having to go through that grind? It's going to be very interesting to see how these teams handle it moving forward.
But I think it's going to be impossible. It's going to be impossible to look at a situation like even if they struggle in football, the economics make it to where it would have been like the choice between staying in the Big 12 or moving to the SEC. I think was an easy one for Texas and Oklahoma, because if you stay in the Big 12, even if you win more football games than you would have won coming to the SEC, you could run into the Clemson and Florida State problem, which is the economic realities make it to where, even if you make the playoff, once you run into the best teams in the SEC, are they going to just have the resources to have considerably better rosters than you are? I mean, Oklahoma and Texas, in order to field the kind of teams that can win the national championship, they probably had to jump to the SEC, just like USC and UCLA, in order to field competitive, teams that can be competitive enough to win the national championship, they need the revenue that the Big Ten provided instead of the revenue that the Pac-12 provided. And I think that's probably going to be true for Texas and Oklahoma as well. They risked they risked falling behind by staying in the Big 12.
And if I may make one more point, I know you guys are up against a break.
No, that's fine.
I'm really interested in seeing programs like LSU who – you know, for a lot of people don't realize this, LSU went through decades of very mediocre success in football and men's basketball. I really wonder if LSU and A&M might go down a rung, and Missouri, just with having, not having sort of, with LSU not having exclusive SEC rights to pluck everybody they want out of Houston. I mean, I think a few teams will kind of come back to the pack just with kind of a geographic balance.
That'll be interesting to see. I mean, I feel like there's enough talent. Oklahoma's been getting players out of Texas forever. But yeah, that's an interesting thought. The bigger the conference, the tougher it is for everybody in it.
I think Tex would probably tell us that the folks who are invested in keeping LSU competitive aren't going to let that happen.
Right? And unless something crazy happens, the talent in that state is ridiculous for its size.
And they're still the only SEC program in that state.
That is right.
All right, guys. Thank you much.
Good stuff, John. Good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Plenty of time for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
If you truly care.
390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final segment of hour number one. All right, we were just looking, and apparently the SEC has indeed joined in with the other conferences that have approved the settlement in the House versus NCAA lawsuit, leaving just the Pac-12. And we were just talking about this, so I guess it's
the Pac-2.
The two. And what does it matter if they don't approve it?
Yeah. What?
They're not even really what they consider a power conference.
No,
anymore.
They're not.
Yeah, they don't even have enough for a conference, much less a power conference.
And I do wonder if this aspect of it needs to be unanimous or not, if this element needs to be every conference on board or
I don't know, because, I mean, what we've read is that
the votes thus far
within conferences have not been unanimous.
The expectation, yeah. if the Pac-12 vote, and I believe...
Don't they need a tiebreaker with just two?
Yeah, I wonder if, yeah, I wonder what they do in that, if they go, you know, they call Cal or something and find out what, you know, where they
Boise
go.
Boise State.
But the, yes, Boise State gets, Alaska gets a vote. But the, if the Pac-12 also votes yes, tomorrow we could get announcements of a settlement and things becoming more official.
Yeah, maybe some details, yeah. Or at least some ideas as to what some of this might mean.
Now some of the settlement terms have gone public already. I mean, that was the, you know, Dellinger and wrote a long piece about, like, the, you know, what these could mean.
The number, I mean, the $2.8 billion, and
yes,
the,
but it's
20 to 30 million per team.
But yeah,
$2.8 billion, so they don't have to pay $9 billion.
And what's interesting? What's been interesting to me is it's talking about why did things start in 2016?
I believe something is backdated. I believe
it's like going back
six years.
So
from
is it only athletes from 2016 on that are going to be involved?
I believe the concern would be that if you open this up to the beginning of college athletics, you would assuredly bankrupt the institutions. If you said,
well, if my college career ended in 2015, I wouldn't be too dang happy.
Well, I mean, if your college career ended in 1970, you probably shouldn't be.
Well, of course not, but I mean, I'm just thinking, you know.
Wasn't this a class action lawsuit,
yes,
too?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, we were talking about earlier in the week. It's, and I guess with the video game coming back this summer, like that's another wrinkle in the, you know, the story of NIL and the story of the changing landscape of college athletics. But
I think the video game is a good example of, like, you know, when you talk about, like, you know, all right, is everybody going to agree to this? Is everybody going to be on the same page about money and all that? Like, what EA had to do to get everybody to get their licenses of the video game, were like, hey, we're going to send all of you X amount of dollars and a copy of the game. And it was just like,
yeah,
it was like 99.9% of people were in. So I'm hoping. And
once
I'm
it was
thinking,
also, EA also made it clear, we're not going to negotiate with individuals who want something more than that. You just won't be in the game.
Right.
Because there could be conceivably a Quinn Ewers or a struggle.
What did Arch?
Carson Beck.
Didn't Arch say?
I believe Arch Manning may have opted out of the game, yeah. But it's like I think the issue was
Not the backup quarterback in Texas.
That's what, even the most high profile players in college football weren't going to get a better deal. They just won't be. They just wouldn't be in the game. And I think
that's how it works in like Madden, 2K, and all that. It is a deal with the Players Association, basically. So I mean, I think yes, there is going to be a Players Association at some point, and when that happens, it's going to have to be collectively bargained. It's going to have to be, you know, stuff like this is going to be agreed upon because that's the only way to go about
it. Once this football game drops, Justin, like, the torch goes up for a college basketball game. Like, it's what, I mean, I need.
Dan, I'm going to be honest with you. You're like one of like 20 people who will buy it.
Oh, we want it. We want it, though. I mean, it was, even if.
The whole reason they stopped making it. It was because nobody bought it.
Well, a couple of reasons. And Ed O'Bannon called
that is
lawyer.
A pretty big.
Ed O'Bannon, they made a couple more football games before they mm-hmm. you know, after they stopped making basketball.
Although the Ed O'Bannon,
they made two college baseball games. I had them.
The most notable thing about EA's college.
On the MVP engine.
The most notable thing about EA's college basketball games ultimately is that Ed O'Bannon saw his likeness in one of them.
Yep,
that's
right. All right, we're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. Plenty of time for you to join in.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well as we head into the second hour of the show on another nice May afternoon. It's, high school graduation is just about here. I mean, traffic is really, really thinned out a little bit now. So.
Oh, no, you're able to maneuver. And I believe tonight.
I went downtown yesterday. It was wonderful.
Yeah, it's great. It's crazy.
How about a shout out? I believe tonight is graduation at the
Auburn.
Duck, or is it?
Yes.
Is it tonight's graduation?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It's about. I knew it was about to happen.
Congratulations.
Congratulations
to the grads out there as they move on from Auburn High to whatever's next.
Yeah, absolutely. We welcome everybody into the Thursday Drive.
Avoid that part of town tonight. Unless
probably a good idea. Probably a good idea.
Unless you're actively going to the graduation festivities and
or
stuff.
Or just be aware of it, okay? Because it may slow you down a bit. It's Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio on this Thursday. Drew once again at the controls. Ferg, tell everybody what's going on with the Observer.
Yeah, so a lot of basketball this week, obviously, and you know, Bill, you were out there as well, talking to Bruce Pearl earlier this week. Got mm-hmm. several things out of that. Did a podcast, a lot of basketball earlier this week. Tomorrow, mailbag, we talk football and basketball, some fun kind of big picture stuff, roster stuff, and then Dan and Painter and I will have a podcast as well that will go up tomorrow morning. So auburnobserver.com, sign up there. It's $6 a month or $60 a year to subscribe. And we, you know, even in the off season, even in the summer, the dog days, we guarantee you at least three new newsletters and two podcasts a week. And we've been keeping that going pretty strong.
Still figuring out what tonight's podcast is going to be about. If you want to ask Justin about a couple things he's written in the last couple of weeks, so maybe we'll revisit Chad Baker Mazzara's off season and why that's such a big deal.
I think we might end up talking about this whole NCAA thing.
Could be, yeah, with tomorrow, you know, the announcements of settlements expected, you know, tomorrow. In house versus NCAA and what that could mean moving forward. Still need to find and maybe with the Memorial Day weekend here, you know, we got to do the summer movie preview. So you know, we got to work that into a work that.
Oh
a
yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, no kidding.
By the way, did y'all on Friday did the old restaurant thing pop back up on Friday last week? Because Thursday that was the whole second hour when I was.
No, there. No, no.
We got feedback on Friday about how much people enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, man.
Our look back at it. Bill needs to be on the next Grubserver podcast.
When we do.
Oh, I can go back. Yeah, I definitely can go back.
Yeah, historical perspective and stuff. Man. Some restaurants that even we did not mention. Crepe Myrtle, which is a place that we were both.
No, that's true.
You know, another.
Well, somebody mentioned it.
Was that? I think we were talking about to somebody.
Well, you know,
may
Crepe
have been
Myrtle's botanics.
Indeed, it is. But it's good. One of our favorite places too.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we'll you know, it's the summer. We gotta have some fun at this time of year. We did have a stretch, and I encourage everybody who's a subscriber or, you know, wants to be a subscriber. We did have a stretch a couple weeks ago where we did four guest episodes in a row, and we had some really good ones. Christian Clemente, we taught all things Auburn football recruiting with him. That was a lot of fun. Our buddy Max Olson taught the transfer portal, kind of big picture SEC college football. Blake Lovell did a big SEC basketball preview with him, just kind of the offseason so far, and then our buddy Adam Cole as well. So we've had a lot of good guest episodes recently if you want to dig back into the archives.
Speaking of basketball, is this the first time we're talking to Justin since Auburn caught a turtle?
Yes.
It
is indeed. And, as Justin said, spent a little time with Bruce. That's where we found out. At least I hadn't heard that until Bruce just mentioned turtle and said, "Oh, that's
first reference."
Yeah,
first reference. He called him turtle.
Yes.
So that's going to be the move.
And then we learned why.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Jaheim Hudson. I think Auburn swung maybe for some bigger name players at power forward, and for different reasons weren't able to get them in the portal, but you end up getting Jaheim Hudson. You look at his game. I think it fits in really well with what Auburn likes to have from their power forwards. He's a hustle guy. He's a glue guy. But also, I mean, the one thing that stood out to me the most about him when we're watching him on film for the story I did, he's got a really pretty jump shot. I mean, for a 6'8 guy who is not what you would classify as like a pure shooter, mm-hmm. he's got a really, really good form, very repeatable, goes up and down, real balanced. I think on a team like Auburn, where, and I say the same thing with Chaney Johnson as well, people are wondering, you know, I have a question about it in the mailbag tomorrow. Like, people were wondering, like, I'm not sold yet with the whole Chaney Johnson and Jaheim Hudson and power forward thing. It's like, okay, if that's your fifth option, if that's your fifth best scoring option in a lineup is a guy like Chaney who can get hot, or a guy like Jaheim Hudson who, oh, by the way, his last game at SMU, he scored 22 against a really good Indiana State team, you can do a whole lot worse than that. And I think on teams where you have –
You've got some scorers.
Got plenty of scoring. You know,
he
can do the other stuff.
Yeah. When, you know, we were talking with Jason Caldwell about this yesterday, and it really feels like if Auburn can get 10 rebounds a game out of its power forward, then that would be fabulous. Whatever scoring you get. Yep. And I think they'll get some. I think they will.
Both of those guys have the ability to knock down shots from the perimeter. I think both of those guys, Jaheim Hudson, not a guy who plays above the rim. He's his inside game's a lot more methodical, a lot more footwork based. Whereas we know with Chaney Johnson, he's a skyscraper, mm-hmm. like he's a really, really good leaper. So I like that balance in there. Pretty good defender, works hard on the boards. And I think Bruce mentioned it on Monday, you're getting a guy who isn't going to be promised the world and is going to work hard with this opportunity.
He knows what he's getting. I mean, he's a guy that's familiar with Auburn. He's some of those guys
that Auburn looked at in the portal, power forward, I think were wanting, hey, I need to go be playing 30 minutes. And with Chaney Johnson coming back,
at least 28, I would think.
Yeah, and with Chaney Johnson coming back, that is just a harder sell to make because this staff really believes in Chaney Johnson, and they should. You look at, I think it's the last 11 games of last season, he averaged like a dozen points a game and was shot really well from pretty much everywhere on the floor.
And those power forwards wanting 28, 30 minutes a game weren't necessarily being unreasonable because there were other places where they could get 28, 30 minutes a game.
Well, it's like
Achor's going to Kansas State.
Sure.
And he's probably going to start at power
forward. Dylan Mitchell's going to Cincinnati, and that's a good pay. It's like the Duke Miles situation again. Like, yes, Duke Miles would have had a role at Auburn, but he's probably going to have a bigger role at Oklahoma because Oklahoma has more to replace. They've got more that they have to reset. I saw a thing today. It was 247 had their power rankings for SEC basketball. Auburn number one on that. But, Isaac Trotter does a really good job covering basketball for them. He looked at, you know, projected starting five, and Duke Miles is the projected starter at Oklahoma. He was not going to be the starter at Auburn. He wasn't, unless something – really crazy happened in the offseason and in the summer, and he was able to beat out J.P. Pegues.
Where did he have Oklahoma in those rankings?
12.
Yeah, I was thinking, it's understandable. I mean, you're still, but it's
maybe
not
even lower than that.
Better, I mean, so,
yeah, I think about, yeah. I was going off, I think it was 14th.
I know, they might be.
I know 16 was LSU, and I know 15 was Vandy.
Year three, if LSU is the worst team in the league for Matt McMahon, year three,
And it's just a lot of, like, they just got to have a lot of pieces to come together. Yeah, no, I think it's a tough spot. But, yeah, going back to Hudson again, with Johnson and Hudson, if your power forward spot, like, yes, there's always going to be, like, even the best teams, you're going to have a, like, you're not going to be able to be like, oh, all of our guys can go out there and get 20.
Every night. Yeah, you're not going to have.
That's not how it
20
works.
Point
yeah,
scores,
that's but. Not, I know Ole Miss is trying to do that, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Is it too simplistic to look at other undersized fours that Bruce Pearl has been able to get production out of? DeShaun Murray, Malik.
Both of these guys are a little bigger than
he's a lot bigger than DeShaun
Murray.
Yeah.
I mean, you would think of undersized the wrong
Duke's
word,
got – or Turtle's got a lot of – he looks like Chris Moore to me.
Chris was another one I was going to mention.
He's got
it. Unheralded, I guess would be.
He's got a Chris – he's got some – he's not as athletic as Chris is, but it's a lot of that dirty work grinded out. If you want to see a comparison with DeShaun Murray, I think offensively he looks a lot like DeShaun Murray. Can't play face up, can't stretch the floor, but it's a lot of that. You know, he's going to get crafty around the rim. He's going to use his footwork. He's going to get the really good free throw shooter. He's 80% free throw shooter last year, which is always really helpful to get from a guy who's going to play in your front court. But no, I think Turtle Hudson is a really good pickup for Auburn. You know, this is a team that I think, you know, I go back to what we were saying. I think I said it last week when I was on here, but you look at, it's only natural for Auburn fans to, like, look at what Alabama's done or Kansas or whatever and say, why can't we just get everybody we want? And I think we just saw this past season, Auburn won 27 basketball games. They're top five team in pretty much every analytic thing you could find. That they're returning three of their top four players off of that team, which is crazy to think about because not very many college basketball teams do that. But the basis of that basketball team last season was their chemistry and their cohesiveness, not necessarily just raw talent, you know? Jani Broome was an All-American. Jani Broome was, at best, a second-round pick in this draft class. And so when you go get a guy like Turtle Hudson, yeah, like, you're not getting the very best player you could have gotten or wanted to get at that power forward spot. What are you getting? You're getting a guy who's going to come in and play his role. And Bruce Pearl talked about how great of a teammate he's been. His last three head coaches have talked about how much they like him. Like, I look at that and I say, you're trying to keep that train rolling from last year. When you look at last year's team, Auburn doesn't need to be radically different than they were last year. They just need to have what they did last year and just get more out of their backcourt, keep it going in their front court. And you've got a team that, I mean, think about it. They won the SEC tournament, and heading into that Yale game, they were very trendy to be a team that can make a run. Now, they probably were going to get beat by UConn, but that was it's a really trendy pick. You know, and when you return a lot of that and then make some upgrades, this team's going
to
be fine.
That's why comparisons to Bama's situation, I think, are flawed, too, because Alabama, beyond Sears and Nelson.
We don't even know if Sears is coming back.
And we don't know yet if Sears is back. But beyond Sears and Nelson, they got Reitzel. And then, and then I think after that,
Reitzel's back.
Yeah, he's back. Rylan Griffin went to Kansas. But it's
Nelson's back, Reitzel's back, Sears could be back, and then Stevenson could be back.
But I mean, I think Bama had more urgent upgrades and more places where they wanted to improve from where they looked at where
they got so many guards. I don't know how they're gonna play them. And that's the thing. It's like, if you want to play the comparison game in May, right, and you want to look and say, what have you done for me lately? You'd be like, wow, all these other teams have gotten whoever they wanted.
Yeah, all those other teams didn't return everything that Auburn did.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the thing. If you want to do that, then let's let these people go.
People are like, oh man, Auburn struck out and whiffed on all these guys. It's like, they're returning an All-American center. They're returning two guys in Denver Jones and Denver Jones and Chad Baker-Mazzara, who at the end of the season were giving you a dozen points a game. They both shot well over 40% from deep last season. Like, there's a foundation here. Now, yes, did Auburn get everybody they wanted? No. But, like, there are different reasons for that. And as
I give them kudos for going after the guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you might as well go after the top guys. And,
if you think you can convince a kid who could go start at another good D1
team
to come in and split time,
yeah, absolutely.
If you can do that.
I think Bruce's top two priorities.
And he got JP Pickies early, by the way.
The top two priorities, yep. The top two priorities for Bruce this offseason were retain Jani Broom if he wants to continue playing college basketball and go find a veteran upgrade at the point guard position over what you had last year.
Oh, retain Jani Broom.
Oh, and by the way, they retained everybody else.
That's right. They retained, like, but I wonder
if... No disrespect to the point guards and Katie Johnson. Katie Johnson obviously making the decision to get more playing time. You were already upgrading your point guard spot. Like, there's a lot of value in just bringing back Denver and Chad and Chaney.
And no kidding.
But how about Dylan Carwell? Statistically, one of the best defensive players in the country.
Yeah. If you'd struck out on those two goals, though, of retaining Jani and finding a point guard option that you felt really good about, I think that even like the how good the team could be if you retain those other guys, you're sort of nibbling around the margins as opposed to trying to go all in on a champion, which is what I think they've done by retaining Jani and going and getting a point guard.
And I think for Auburn fans who are frustrated or disappointed that they weren't able to get, you know, that they missed, that, you know, they went after these guys and they lost them, and, you know, that's like, oh, man, that's tough. Like, it's negative news, but it's not necessarily just crushing news. And I think for all the fans, like, look at what people nationally are saying about Auburn. Look at what people who cover college basketball and know the content. Like, it's so easy to get kind of just focused in on, like,
well, just the new guys. Well,
or I just know Auburn's roster because, let's be very, very honest, and this is not a bad – I'm not trying to talk down on anybody. But for a majority of – maybe not a majority. For a good number of people who are Auburn basketball fans, you don't really watch college basketball outside of that. You love Auburn.
No, you're right about that.
And you like Auburn. But, like, you got to look at it in the context. If you had a top five team,
is this a ball knowers meeting?
Yeah, you know, it's like if you had a top five team analytically last season, right, and then a top four seed in the NCAA tournament, and you said, hey, that team is going to bring back their top player, and then number three and number four off of that in a college basketball season, you're like, wow, that team is going to be nuts next season. And it's like,
and that's not all they're bringing back either. I mean, they're bringing back,
but no one else is like that.
Yeah.
A&M, I think, is the only other team in the SEC who is bringing nearly as much production back as Auburn, and we know that A&M wasn't
as good. No,
people thought they were going to be as good. Something happened there, and I don't really know what.
To me, if Sears is back, 1-2 is arguable in the preseason between Alabama and Auburn, and there is a healthy gap.
But you know, but one thing you know is
because
I think you've got a pretty good idea of what Auburn's chemistry is going to be. Alabama's still got to be determined.
They got to figure it out.
I mean, yeah, and three could be Florida, could be State, could be Tennessee, could be Texas, it could be Arkansas or Kentucky. If folks really like one of those teams, but again, those are all like these are teams that are assembled in a catalog.
And again, I don't want to talk down to anybody, but like it's the other thing there. It's like this isn't football. This isn't just throw as much star power as you can get on a team, and that's how you win a championship. That's not how college basketball works. That's not how the sport is.
You may not have to. I mean, you probably will in these days of transfer portal.
Did UConn have the best?
You'll probably have huge turnover every year, but
no.
But if you don't have to and you're good, then you don't. Then don't do it. I mean, add the best pieces you can. And that's Auburn's very fortunate. It's not going to be the same next year. Next year, Auburn's going to need to bring a lot of pieces in.
And I think there's some people, you know, a lot of people are excited about JP Bickies, and they should be. I think he's a great fit. He's a great point guard. It's just I think now with more and more teams getting guys that are like you know, like a place like Alabama or Kansas or whatever, they're getting these teams that aren't these guys that aren't necessarily mid-major guys, but they're big name, you know, big conference guys. And it's so funny to me. Is like, I wonder if these same people 2 years ago would have been like, whatever, about Jani Broom. And look at what Jani Broom ended up being, right? You know, how many people
did you see?
How many people would have looked at, like, if Dalton Connect, let's go this time last year, if Dalton Connect transferred to Auburn instead of Tennessee, and Auburn wasn't going after him, but, like, if they got, and you looked at him and said, oh, here's a guy, he scored, all right, he was a second-team All-Big Sky, like, maybe, you know, whatever. And it's like, and then he ends up being the best player in the conference that year, like, that's one of those things where it's just like you got to take all this in the context of it. It is not a football exercise where it's just like, well, the teams that recruit the best out of, you know, the most star power are going to win. Basketball is different. Basketball, it's the chemistry is different. The rosters are smaller, and you know, five stars don't always make it.
And what guy?
And two stars who start at mid majors sometimes become All Americans.
What guys were coming out of high school has never seemed to
the best like, players we have mentioned in this. The best players we have mentioned in this segment were all mid major guys.
Yeah,
or small conference teams. So not even mid majors.
The first team, the eight guys that made the first team in the SEC this past year, I believe five or six of them signed with mid majors out of high school. And the other two were not top 200 players.
There was a stat that was at the NCAA tournament of the starting five of the final four. I think this is right. I think of the starting fives of the final four teams, there's 20 guys. There's like half of them were maybe a little more.
It was 12.
Were transfers.
12
were mid-major transfers. Now, yeah, you would love to have a Stephon Castle. And
sure.
Hey, Auburn, you got a Todd Bedford. But, like, you know, that's the thing. It's like every – I had this conversation with somebody the other day, and I thought they made a really, really good point about it. It's like, look, the way Bruce Pearl builds his team and the way Nate Oates builds his team are different. Both of them have been found to be successful. You know, it doesn't have to be one way or another. And I think we saw last season, they were even on the, you know, they split the season series. Obviously, Auburn had the more success, you know, overall in the regular season, won the SEC title. Tournament title. Alabama made the run to the Final Four. So it's like there's more than one way to skin a cat.
It can work multiple ways.
I know we need to take a break. Yeah. Kyle Tucker had this. I just wanted to clarify. So the eight SEC players last year, first team. Mark Sears started his career at Ohio. Broome at Moorhead. Zion Pullen at UC Riverside. Antonio Reeves at Illinois State. Tolu Smith at Western Kentucky. And Dalton Knecht at Northern Colorado. The two guys that were still with the teams they signed with out of high school. Sakai Ziegler was the number 273 ranked player coming out of high school to go to Tennessee. Wade Taylor, the fourth, was the number 121 ranked player coming out of high school going to A&M. So it's, I mean, it's six mid majors and two guys that were outside the top 100 were your top eight, your first team all conference.
It was in the SEC. That's right. All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join in. And you can do so by calling the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Back with more here on the Thursday Drive.
Yeah, like
it's time to stop dealing with unreliable network copies.
106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. 25 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. We're well into hour number two of the Drive, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. All right, talked a good bit about basketball and the addition of Turtle Hudson. Auburn's still looking for one more.
Yeah, and something to keep in mind here also, we are about to come up very close here. I can't remember what day it is exactly, but the NBA draft withdrawal deadline.
29th, next Wednesday.
Yeah. I know of at least one player Auburn is looking at that is currently in the portal and is that Auburn is looking at who is in the portal and going through the NBA draft process. So, I mean, it's kind of like what happened with Janai last year. You don't know for sure
right.
until they go ahead and pull on out. And if they pull on out, then you have, you know, then it's back to being open season again. Like you can still recruit them right now, but you also know that the lure of potentially going to the NBA and what is like probably the weakest draft. This is probably going to be the weakest draft class that I can remember, or it might be the I can never remember the year, Dan, but it's the Andrea Bargnani year.
Okay.
When Bargnani went one overall.
The Michael Olowokandi draft is also.
That's a little before my time.
Yeah.
But that's, the Bargnani.
Kwame Brown wasn't much of a draft.
The
Pau Gasol was in it, but still, you know.
Yeah, the Bargnani year is the one that like holds up for me. Is like, whoa, what was going on? And the Anthony Bennett year wasn't great either, yeah. But yeah,
but there's not a guy in this draft that people are necessarily convinced is a high level impact NBA player.
Which is so funny that this is the one the Hawks win. They came so close to winning the Zion one, and Zion really wanted to play there. And then it's like Atlanta, hey, you won the lottery finally. And they won it with like the eighth best odds. And they're like, you get it in a draft class where everybody's like, eh.
I mean,
there might not be an all-star in this
group. The closest thing to a finished product in the Kwame Brown draft was Shane Battier. And people were sort of arguing like, well, Shane Battier could be a good starter for an NBA team. Does he ever project to be?
Yeah.
Like, is he going to be a superstar? Is he going to be a consensus all-star?
Is it SAR kid that's like projected number one overall? Or it's the big center.
Okay.
There's a big center that played in like Australia, and people think that's probably going to be the number one pick. And I read a like breakdown of him the other day, and it was like, yeah, he's a really good rim runner. He's going to be good in rebounding, rim protector and all that. You know, he's not like this super flashy player. And people are like, you know, reminds people like when Clint Capella came out, and I'm like, are you telling me the Hawks are going to draft Clint Capella to replace Clint Capella with the number one overall pick? There was a thing the other day. It was like, they were trying to figure out the other day, who is the best NBA player that you could trade and get straight up for the first pick in this draft? And it was like, they were going to like guys on playoff teams that were like sixth man, seventh man on these teams.
Well,
I'm
yeah,
like,
I mean, if there's
dire.
I don't think the Wolves would give you Naz Reid.
No,
I don't think they'd give you Reid for this. Like, I don't think you're getting Reid for this pick. I mean,
no,
maybe PJ Washington can be yours for.
No, yeah, you're talking about like a situation where it's like, would the Pacers trade, you know, TJ McConnell, or would the Celtics trade like Peyton Pritchard for
the rights
him
to Horford?
Yeah, like it's bleak. It's bleak. So that's the thing, though. It's like this draft class is interesting because I think there are going to be a number of guys. Like there are going to be some dudes who are first rounders in this draft that would not have normally been first rounders. Mm-hmm. And first round means guaranteed money. First round means, you know, a lot more different than being a second round guy.
If I had to push my chips in on like who's someone in this draft who will be an effective NBA player a couple of years from now,
Klingon
and Castle would both be on my list. Maybe Reed Sheppard would be
Reed Sheppard. Yeah, and he was a pretty good defender.
What do you think of Connect as a pro? Like is Dalton Connect a is I mean
great value brand Carmelo Anthony? I mean like the game translates. It's just like so much of the NBA is like, especially when you're evaluating draft prospects, is just like, do you have the athleticism? Do you have the speed, the strength, and all that?
I love Jimmer.
When you take a step up in classification, do you have the physical tools to be able to hang? We know you can shoot the ball. We know you're skilled. But like, is that going to translate? And it's the thing with Connect is I think the skill is definitely NBA. You know, he's got NBA skill. It's just, is he going to be big enough, strong enough, fast enough, quick enough to be an effective wing at that level compared to, you know, what he was in college?
I'd be tempted to kick the tires.
Oh yeah,
see if there's something there,
dude. If I have a lottery pick and I'm seeing like, you know, I don't know how it all shook out this year. I know there's some just straight up awful basketball teams this year in the NBA. But there's a handful of teams that are in the lottery that were very, very close to making the playoffs. And so it's like,
especially now with the making the playoffs, yeah, and finishing in the top 10.
I hate that so much. But it's like, yeah, if you're a team and you feel like you might not even have to be a piece away. Maybe you're just right there on the doorstep. A guy like Dalton Connect could help you get over that hump. You know, a guy like Donovan Klingon could help you get over that hump. Whereas those teams that are picking like in the top three, top four, maybe not the Hawks as much, but those teams that were like really bad, like the Pistons, aren't the Pistons picking like fifth again this year? Yeah, they tanked harder than I've ever seen a team tank in my life. And
they got to find
some upside.
Kyle Boone projecting for CBS Sports had the Pistons taking Dalton Connect with the fifth overall pick.
They need somebody who can score.
Yeah,
that would be helpful.
They have the two international guys, Sar going first, the Frenchman Zach going second.
There's a Rem
Klingon third, Reed Sheppard 4, Dalton Kconnect 5. As they're,
look,
as
man,
they're
I thought Reed Sheppard was great, and I obviously thought Dalton Kconnect was great, but boy, top five picks, I did not. I've seen top five picks. I have seen dudes up close, like, because then you think about like the Jabari draft, right, where it's like Jabari goes 3, and it's like, man, you're telling me Reed Sheppard's around that range? I don't know.
Castle 7.
Those
are your four college players in the top 10.
Because wow. we all thought like Jabari had a real shot to go at 1. If it wasn't 1, it was going to be 2. And you know, obviously, you know, the way they went in that draft. But that time in Greenville, I got to watch courtside. You know, being at the tournament, I got to watch Paolo Banchero up close, and I was like, I can see why you'd pick the number one. Like I love Jabari, and I think Jabari was a phenomenal player, but like watching Paolo Banchero, I'm just like, you know, he's 6'10", and he looks like he's made out of concrete, and he's a great ball handler. Like I just maybe, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see how all that shakes out. But like, yeah, you know, maybe some years you look at Dalton Kennett, you're like, ooh, really good college player that came out of nowhere and did awesome that year. It's maybe a lottery pick, you know.
Yeah, that's lottery, more what you think. Maybe
a lottery pick. And not like, no, this not is one of the five best guys. Players in the country.
I mean, Curry and Jimmer would be like your sort of, I mean, those are the guys where it's like,
boy, think of when the Hornets offense overdrafted Frank Kaminsky. Sure. Like 8th.
Sure.
But
I think Curry and Jimmer both seem to like, oh, wow, the offense is there. It's just a question. I mean, Adam Morrison was a lottery pick. Coming out against Agnew all that time ago.
We're naming a lot of Charlotte Bobcats picks and Hornets picks, so that's probably a bad sign. I think they did pretty well in their last big one, though.
All right, I think we need to get to the bottom of the hour break. I still want you to answer the question.
Oh, what?
And that was about Auburn still looking for another guy.
Yeah, no. We'll talk
about the different possibilities.
Because I think what Bruce said Monday was very
really
revealing.
Yeah,
really revealing.
Really was.
And if the couple of guys I'm thinking that they might be looking after, that makes a whole lot more sense in hindsight.
Well, we'll talk about that and more. You can join in again, 334-321-1390, as we head into the final 25 minutes of the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes or so here of the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. And, yeah, we were talking about, you know, Auburn with one opening on its basketball roster. And Bruce Pearl Monday up at Willow Point in Alex City talking about needing one more player. Mm-hmm. But he left it open as a there were multiple possibilities.
Yeah. When he said that he wasn't sure if it was going to necessarily be a point guard, you're just like, all right.
Yeah, it was really cool because it was like, be a 1-2, a 2-1, a 2-3, or a 3-2.
And it's when you look at guys that Auburn has reportedly reached out to that are in the portal right now that haven't committed anywhere, they're mostly wings. Mm-hmm. You know, the ones I've seen are more wings. Point guard, I hadn't really seen anything.
Duke Miles, I mean, they were after. I mean, that was
no. I'm talking about guys who are still available.
Okay, yeah, players Auburn is currently pursuing. Yes, I mean, because they've been linked
guys that are still available.
They've been linked to some point guards previously.
Jordan Ivy Curry, you know, Duke Miles. Yeah. Again, I think if the Dior Johnson thing was going to happen, it was probably what happened right now.
So. But it would suggest, it was something we talked about on a previous podcast, Justin. The willingness to play guys on the roster right now at point guard other than JP.
When he comes out, when Bruce comes out unprompted and says, "Hey, we're going to play Denver Jones at the one more," you know, we're going to let him work at the one. Oh, and also, you know, Tahad can play some one as well. I don't want him to be the one right now for his career. I want him to come in and score, but he can play the one. And then so you open yourself up where you don't have to get a true point guard in the portal, because Bruce made it clear on Monday that, like, the big thing for them is not necessarily we need to upgrade at this particular position. It's like the backcourt just needs to get better.
And we were talking about it a little bit yesterday, Justin. I mean, you still have to do the math. You do, all right, if you're getting 28 minutes a game out of J.P. Pegues.
I think he can go up to 30.
All right, but if you're getting 30 there, mm-hmm. and Denver gives you 5 or 6 at point.
Yep.
And Tahad gives you the other 4 or 5 mm-hmm. at point. Denver is not still getting his 30 minutes, though, at the two.
Correct.
So you're taking you're taking time away from the two.
And that's what he said. He needs somebody else in there.
And if it's Chad, you know, if Chad works some at the two, then that's taking a little bit of his time from the three.
Or is it one of the guys that are, you know, Tahad will be a two
yeah.
In that sense? Could it be Chad? One of the guys they bring in, if they bring in a wing, it could be there. And then you say, okay, what about the three? Well, you have, you know, Chad, if he has to play the two, well, you got Jakai Howard, who, by the way, had 60 in a game the other day, which is nuts. You still have Chris Moore. Bruce talked about potential of playing Janie at the three at times if they want to play a big lineup. You know, the versatility of this team, I think, is going to be what's really interesting. I think you're going to – like last season, there was some versatility, but it was like you know who was the one, you knew who was the two, three, four, five, and there was very little moving around off of that. This upcoming season, I think pretty much everybody Auburn has on their roster, with maybe the exception of J.P. Pegues and the exception to Dylan Cardwell.
Yeah, I was going to say Dylan.
Those are – like everybody else is like
Dylan's
you can see them play.
Yeah.
And I think J.P.'s a one. He could play the two, but I think he's a one. I think he's going to be on the floor for you. He's going to be a one.
Yeah, he could play the two if you had somebody else you really wanted at the one while JP was out there.
But it would be one of those things where you're like, yeah, he's probably going to be your ball handler in that sense. So yeah, I think you're potentially looking at wings or at the very, you know, maybe even like a combo guard, you know, there. And I think that's the way to go. There was a question I have in the mailbag tomorrow. I was just talking about it right here, but. They're asking – somebody asked me, he's like, is it the worst thing in the world if J.P. Pegues plays 30 minutes a night? I'm like, no, because you look at it – so last season it was pretty much 2020 with Aiden and Trey.
That was such an aberration from what Bruce had done.
Correct.
Do you guys really feel like he wanted to just keep it 2020 year?
And you look before then, Wendell, 26, 28 minutes those two seasons, you did have Zepp. You could move him around. You go back, the previous four point guards under Bruce all played more than 30 minutes a game.
They played 32 plus.
Yes, exactly.
And
so
that was even with Javon, who he felt good about as a backup. He was still playing Jared Harper 30
yeah,
minutes a
I
game
mean,
so, in,
so
that, it, in that 2019 season.
And Javon played 32 minutes a game, you know, the 20 season. So what has happened the last couple of years, I think, has been – a couple of seasons has been kind of like it kind of worked its way into that. You didn't have as much separation, you know, from your point guards, but I think you could have that ability now. They do like having the ball in Denver's hands. They do know Tahad Pettifer could do that, and if they bring in another guy, he might be able to play some one as well.
With both of them off the team now, I would say it's safer to looking back. The plan was for one of those two guys
to emerge,
emerge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I would play at least 25.
And I would say nothing against Trey, but I would have guessed the plan
was Aiden.
The plan was for Aiden to emerge,
and
he
could never get it going. But then I wonder
if there's a lesson there about entrusting a freshman point guard on a veteran team. That sort of stuff.
Which is exactly why he's talking about Tahad
in the way he is.
And why they went out and got JP. If you're going to max out on experience and return and stuff, go get a guy that's played a lot of basketball.
Because you wonder if the Aiden Holloway thing goes, and not that it would have fixed some of the underlying problems with you know what happened on the court, but if it's Aiden Holloway and a youth movement around him, if it's Aiden Holloway with freshmen and sophomores, maybe the adjustment and maybe there's more time for an adjustment like that. Yeah. But when he steps into a team with the expectations that last year's team had, with the veterans on the roster that last year's team had, there's not really
time. Yeah, they're proven commodities. Yeah. You're not the guy. You know, you're supposed to be the facilitator, the distributor.
Yep. And he was a really good assist guy. He just never
and he didn't turn the ball over.
Yep, and Trey had good. Like, here's the other thing. That's the funny thing about this whole scenario. It's like, yeah, I mean, they had to get rid of, they had to get away from that point guard. They won 27 basketball games. Yeah, like, it was still a good, but in well, the losses, it was very notable.
That's right. I mean, and the thing is, and the last
you're
one,
not look, trying to improve a bad team. You're trying to tighten up a very good team.
Unless you're not a very good team or you're the national champ, the last one's going to suck. And it really did because it was Yale. And Bruce still talking even about that one, too.
Even if you're forgetting about a little thing called the NIT.
Even if
hold on. Unless you're not very good. That's what I said.
If you win the NIT, you'd be like, well, crap. Man, crap, it's deal. The NIT.
Yeah,
like,
that's right. That's what I.
A lot of good teams made the NIT.
Oh, great. We're the 70th best basketball team in the country this year. That's awesome.
69th, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right. 334-321-1390. Jerry is on the line. Hey, Jerry.
Some of those teams get in with auto bids.
Hey, guys. I happened to see where a 5-star guard came for a visit to Auburn, Malik. I don't remember his last name, but I'm just curious if he was interested.
Yeah, he's not a I don't have the name right here in front of me, but he's not a class of 24. He's not a guy that would be playing this year.
Oh, okay. Class 25.
Yeah, I mean,
you sound like an interested prospect.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, there's no question. I mean, the you're seeing some big time prospects in multiple sports for the future that are coming in. That's one of the fun things the summer.
The big Malik news on the recruiting trail right now is the local 5-star. Right, and that's
Malik Autry.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a basketball story.
Now a 5-star, the number 29 player in the country.
Yeah, promising defensive lineman from Opelika, who was named a 5-star by 24/7 earlier this week.
That's good.
Oh yeah.
Okay, guys.
Appreciate it, Jerry.
Hope we get them all.
Oh yeah.
Appreciate it.
Can't get them all, but you can hope for every one of them as they come along.
They'll do their best. Justin, have you seen much of Malik Autry? I know he's.
I have not seen as much. I think I saw Opelika once last year, maybe. Oh, I don't even know if I made it out of Opelika this year because I wasn't here for. I wasn't here for the Auburn Opelika.
Yeah, you were
game.
On the
I was,
road.
I was on the road. Mm-hmm. So, no, I haven't. But I mean, man. You talk about 5 stars is from right down the road. That is pretty special. And we were talking about this the other day. Justin Lee and I were. Is Opelika ever had a 5-star? I don't know. Like Jake Bentley was a high 4. I remember, but
was Sean Smith maybe? And Brian Smith turned out to be the better player, but Sean Smith came along the same time as. He was a very, very highly touted.
Definitely, I've definitely recruited 5-stars from Opelika and NCAA player. Before Justin, but I don't know if we've ever had one in.
Yes.
We'll see. We'll see if we can. We'll see if we can get it.
Anthony would probably be able to help me out with that. All right, let's get to our final break of the afternoon. Still time for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from
ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of the drive here on this Thursday afternoon. All right, I looked up. Now you first looked up 5-star Opelika. I went to the Alabama High School Football Historical Society, AHS.
Shout out to 5-stars at Opelika, by the way.
Yeah, how about that? It appears that Sean Smith and LaMarcus Rowell may be the two most highly touted. They're both Parade All-Americans. Both made the Orlando Sentinel All-South team, both Super All-State, that type thing. So, I mean, I don't know.
In the modern recruiting era.
They'd probably be 5-stars.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure, Sean probably would have been. But it was interesting that Brian actually had the better career. His brother Brian, who Auburn brought in, who was a 6'7 defensive end. But good. That was where'd that one come from?
Maybe in the modern era, Malik Autry, the lone 5-star.
Yeah, in absolutely.
Football, yeah, in Opelika football history. But that's a, I mean – yeah, a great accomplishment. There have been some impressive five-star defensive linemen although we were saying that it, you know, ironically enough, Byron Cowart is Auburn's the only time Auburn's ever signed the number one overall player. We were looking at this.
Yeah, I was about to say, he won the last five.
No, he won the last five. The only time Auburn signed the number one player in the nation.
Which with Juju Lewis, is something that people are looking up, the possibility that Auburn could be in on the number one player in the class of 25.
Yeah, one thing, Jason was talking yesterday about the 24/7 new updated. He's on one of the lists as number one.
Okay.
But anyway, Jason was saying yesterday, because Juju is like number 15 or 16 on 24/7.
Yeah, he's number nine in the composite.
But Auburn's recruiting and heavily involved with quite a few five stars.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, when you look at what they ended up doing in that 24 class. You got guys who either finished with five-star rankings from somebody or at one point had a five-star rating from somebody. I mean, it's a lot. You got Cam Coleman, Perry Thompson, Morris Williams, Jamonte Waller, DeMarcus Riddick. Like, it's you start counting them up, and it's you know, that 24 class had as many five-stars in it as Auburn had in the last 5 years.
Combined.
Yeah, exactly. You got to go back to the Bo and Owen year. I think it was the last time they had a
multiple,
multiple five stars. Mm-hmm. So like it's definitely heading in the right direction. And you know, we were talking about earlier with basketball how it's like you can't just throw stars at a problem and make it go away in basketball. Usually football, it's a lot better to do.
Helps.
You need to spread them around. I mean, one thing we've talked about. I mean, it's not going to do you the usually a world of good if you sign, you know, five-star running backs, maybe, but I mean, you can get some points, but no, generally the more higher rated your class is,
talent
the better chance you've got.
Talent acquisition in football is, the data shows that it is the way to be a championship contender. There are a bunch of different ways you can do it in basketball, but in football, it's like if you don't recruit at a high level, it's going to be hard for you to get into the dance, and it doesn't guarantee anything. I think Jimbo Fisher and A&M is a perfect example of that.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it is a big step, and it's a foundation. And for Auburn, it's you've got that. It's a key part. You just got to build on it. And but, you know, the big thing you've got is that, you know, talented players are looking at Auburn and considering Auburn. And for a little while there, it wasn't happening.
No, you're right. It's going to be a star-studded summer. I mean, they've got some really highly touted folks coming in for camps. That'll get started here pretty soon.
Justin, I just sent you a mailbag question.
All right. One more time.
We're already done. Sorry.
One more time before we're out of time on The Observer.
Yeah, auburnobserver.com. Check it out. Mailbag and podcast tomorrow morning. A ton of basketball stuff on there this week. If you want to check that out, auburnobserver.com.
All right. One more show before Memorial Day. Hey, reminder, no show on Monday, Memorial Day. But we're back tomorrow. So hopefully you'll join us then, but that's going to wrap it up for the Thursday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.